Hi, everyone. Welcome back for another episode of Healed and Chilled. And today we have yet another wonderful, amazing special guest. And you guys already know that I like for the guests to have control of the narrative. So if you would, can you please introduce yourself in your own words from your own point of view, and we'll dive right into the interview.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show. And I love that you put about their own narrative. Here's my shameless plug. So my name is Dr. Rod Berger, and I've got a new book coming out called The Narrative Edge: Authentic Storytelling That Meets the Moment. I'm all about story. I was a glutton for punishment, got my doctorate in clinical psych years ago. I have been in storytelling sort of through every medium that I could find: radio, TV, podcasting. I wrote for Forbes for a number of years, Entrepreneur Magazine. I had a recent cover story in Los Angeles Magazine earlier this year. And I'm really fortunate, Yana. I get to, by the power of yes, I get to travel around the world and capture stories of people that you may have heard of or you may not have heard of. And so I'm the lucky guy in that. I'm a bit of a Forrest Gump. I don't know if I could tell you how to get to where I am, or but I can share stories about how this path has impacted me, and the more importantly, the people that have impacted me through storytelling. So I'm a guy who's curious every day, all day long, and that's been a part of my 4,000 plus interviews over the years. So hence the gray hair.
Oh, well, nothing wrong with a little gray. So, was storytelling always a part of your journey? Like when you were younger, did you already know what you wanted to do, or did you sort of discover the importance of being able to tell your own story as you got more seasoned and older in life? Or, but like I said, was it something that you always did, or was it something that the value of it kind of revealed itself as time went on?
I think that's a good question, Yana. For me, it was the story that I wasn't told, is how I would answer that. So I write about this in the book, but my late father grew up in Nazi Germany as a young boy, and he was much older as a father. So you already have sort of the cultural elements of how people think Germans are, which only because I am, I can talk, without, I guess, being sort of rude about an entire nation, right, of people. But he would not share with me. And I've always been curious. And so, it's like anything with a kid. You tell them, well, you can't, we're not going to have ice cream tonight. Okay, fine, I'll wait till tomorrow and say, can I have ice cream? And it sort of continues to build. And for me, it just continued to build. And yet we would have shared experiences where he wouldn't talk, yet we would be watching 60 Minutes and I would be learning about stories of real impact and consequence. And so storytelling for me, I think it really originated in those experiences. And he traveled for work a lot. And I would remember vividly, he would get back from the airport and I would immediately run into the bedroom because I wanted to hear sort of, was sort of like, share something with me that happened. And he wouldn't
Oh
share
no.
anything, right? And so I just, it's again, it's that forbidden fruit. It's that, like, how do I want to know. I'm interested. You're my dad, and yet you're not sharing with me. And so, for whatever reason, good, bad, or indifferent, I think that that, in combination with the stories that he exposed me to through like a 60 Minutes and sort of the world, those have to be some of the initial ingredients to how I've been shaped, to this point when it comes to storytelling. And then along the way, it's just been in saying yes to everything, to sometimes a fault. But saying yes because you just don't know. Have you ever had experiences, Yana, where you say, I don't know, but I'm going to say yes to this, and it turns out to be incredible? And then you tell, I don't know if you're like me, but for me, when that happened, a number of times growing up, it was like, all right, now I have to do that. I have to say yes because I could be turning down like the chance of a lifetime and whatever that is. And so I think that's a, I don't know if it's a healthy fear, but that sort of little bit of fear has always spurred me on to say, I don't know, maybe Yana's got a story that I need to dive into. Do you know what I mean? And oh, wait a minute, Yana is what? And her fam, you just, it's this amazing trail of gift opening.
Brilliant, brilliant. And through like podcasting, so I can imagine only through like telling other stories, I find that I learn a lot about myself and the world just from other people's perspectives. So have you learned anything surprising or like, oh wow, I never would have thought of this perspective once you get to know someone else's story?
The short answer would be yes. Just because I'm human, so I'd like to think so, right? I've probably failed in times where I've missed the lesson that was, in essence, right in front of me, and it took something else to sort of metaphorically hit me in the head to say, "Wait a minute, I missed something there." I will tell you, it's a bit of a drug to capture people's story,
Oh,
and I
wow.
say it this way: if you capture people's story. Like, I don't like the term journalist, or I think it's a dying sort of world in that regard. It is a bit of a drug because when you connect with another human and you understand them in a way that it's pausing the elevator between two floors, there's something about the human condition and connecting with another human that creates this sort of bond, even whether it's through a Zoom or digital platform, or if I'm boots on the ground at a refugee camp. Like, you, there's a connection point that impacts you. And so I will tell you the downside of this, the downslope of all the experiences, Yana, is that it, I need more and more and more, because you're returning your rental car. I'm saying literally and figuratively, you'd return the rental car and you cross over those spikes at the airport, you can't back up. You know what? When you have been in environments where people have shared things that they haven't told the world, if there's a celebrity or someone iconic in that way, or it's someone that is on the fringes, but they're trying to get there and they share vulnerability, you want more. Because you feel even more human. It sounds like you're being selfish, but that's not the intent. But you become more human by the expression of humanity from other people. It's like a reflection, right? You get that. It's like the sun coming back and sort of giving you that vitamin D. And so, yeah, I'd like to think I've been changed and impacted over time. And hopefully it means that I am very, very present with people. When I'm interviewing them, or I'm trying to capture their story, or I don't even know where the story is, but I'm gonna spend time with you and I'm gonna hopefully find it, right?
And when you say that you're really present with people, and I think that that's just a really important term to dissect a little bit, because especially with now and like just in general, there's a lot of words that get thrown around often. And so everyone, the big thing right now, which I definitely agree, and it should be a big thing, is being present, being present. So what does it mean to be present with someone that you're learning about or getting their story out of? And how do you know? Because like when I'm speaking to someone and like doing an interview, I can always tell, like, okay, we've clicked, we're here now, or like, okay, this person's a little bit harder of a nut to crack, and we might not ever get there, but most times you can kind of feel, okay, we're good. So is that what you're referring to, or is like, what do you mean when you say you're being really present with someone and getting to their story and really understanding them on a human level, rather, especially if it's a celebrity, rather than just what the representative is.
So I like that question, and I like it because of a word that I think is important that we don't talk about enough, or perspective, which is agendas. And I think that when, like, if I'm interviewing you, Yana, and I'm coming in with an agenda, and it could be as benign as I've got a flight to catch and I only have 20 minutes, or it's I've got to get this certain information because you're a puzzle piece to a larger story. I can't, being a human, I don't think I can hide that, right? It's
There.
going to come across either in the way that I sort of run over the pause that you inserted, where you silence was actually really valuable to that conversation, or in something that you said, or I wasn't, right? I'm not reflecting and mirroring and building rapport with you in that moment. So I think that's because there's so many agendas that people have. And a lot of times they don't even know that they have them, or it makes them feel like, wait a minute, that sounds like I'm being, I don't know, like I'm better than somebody. No, it's just that we're so, it's hard to pause and take time and say, no, wait a minute. Let me just spend this time because we might, some magic might happen if I just give the time. So I think that the biggest piece is the agenda that people have going into things. And then I think we are victims of our own sort of environment around social media and trying to get the clip or the click, right? And so if we're doing that and that's sort of my objective, then I'm really thinking about what I'm going to say to you, as opposed to connecting with you and developing a relationship with you that starts today and continues on, because I think you're really powerful in what you're doing and you'd made me think, et cetera, right? So that presence to me is, and the other component, the other side of that coin is vulnerability. Like I have to know, and I've had experiences that I can't, I don't know. I mean, it's not like I could prescribe it to somebody, like, you know, loosely saying, and you're like, oh, you need to go do this because this will give you that experience. This is not the Karate Kid where it's like, all right, wax on, wax off. Go. I have been in places on the African continent where I have been the first white face that a young child has seen.
Oh, wow.
That's really powerful. And not in a way that trivializes at all. It's a fantastic responsibility in what that potentially means. And so for me, I've had to, like, those experiences forced me to say, I can't just walk into an environment where I'm the first face they've seen that looks like me and not understand how that's going to impact potentially, if I'm not aware,
That's a good
that
point.
engagement, right? And so I've said this a number of times in interviews, but it, you know, and I'm, people may raise an eyebrow or think that's absolutely crazy. Totally open to your perspective on this, but when I, the first time I had that experience in the bush in Senegal, it, I don't know, it triggered something in me, Jan, and so I've wanted to find out, well, okay, well, what do they call someone that looks like me? And I remember when I asked that question of my guide at the time, who's become a dear friend and who I we call sort of cosmic brothers, is, you know, when I found that out, I thought, okay, well, I'm gonna, like, I need to know what I'm bringing into these conversations. Like, I'm being given all these. I remember we had to, we I got to cross the Gambia River on foot to this very remote village, and it was like, hey, you know, Rod, you can't, there's an, the imam here, and you've got like all these different elements going on, and you've got, we've got to be very careful. Don't look at the imam's child, like all these sort of cultural rules and practices. And it was so funny because I remember thinking, like, as during that example, the imam was so, one, we had such a connection that he wanted me to engage with the 3-year-old. And I remember the guide being like, oh my God, you know, it all goes right. And so that was a great example of like, no, sometimes it's just human to human, right? So when I go and I'm, when, especially in Africa, and I find out what do they call someone who looks like me, I use it. I bring it up. Like last year when I was in Tanzania, in a very remote hilltop with this grandmother, where this hilltop, little kids running around will probably never see local towns. Like that's how remote it was. Through a translator, I was just letting her know, like, I'm so appreciative of, you know, just a Mzungu here with you under the sun, right? And the laughter from her, like it translated, right? It crossed through in a way where her guard was down. Like it was, you know, she dropped her guard down and we had these, just this wonderful conversation, which can be hard through translators. Some may call it crazy, but I found that it's like it's the best gift ever. And so I'll use it in the airports, like, you know, wherever, when I'm in that given country, in that region, and the response is really great. Like, if anything, this guy gets whatever it is, and that is a way for us to sort of break bread without even having a meal together. So very long way of saying sort of the impact of me, but I think it's important that sometimes we don't think about the impact we have on other people just by our presence, the way that we look, the way that we present ourselves, and it can be transformational for themselves and for the people they're around.
I definitely agree, and I don't know if you saw, but my eyes got big because my stepdad is from Senegal. So it's just interesting that of
I
all
love
the countries,
Senegalese. Oh
yeah,
my
that you
gosh.
mentioned, I'm like, oh wow, it's a small world after all, isn't it? I definitely think that that is a really impactful moment when you realize, like, wow, I'm the first person of my kind that these people have experienced, and then to be respectful of their culture, I think is a whole nother can of worms. I'm curious to know, outside of that impactful experience, is there another one that like is in the center of your mind, like, wow, this was truly a transformation, or this was like a once in a lifetime type of experience? Like, was that it, or is there like, do you have
No,
like a
dude.
laundry list?
How long is your show?
Well,
I mean, look, I get it. It's so interesting, you know. And I'm, trust me, I'm sort of put in my place as I should be by the people that know me best when they see, like, okay, yeah. as I'm looking over, it's, the time that I spent with Magic Johnson or with the Pope, like I've had, and it's not about sort of name dropping in those things, because I found myself in some pretty incredible environments. And each time it's just, I try my best to like soak those experiences in. To answer your question, look, there was like a 6 week period of time where, because at some point you kind of, I think anything that any of us do is you start to, if you put enough time in, sometimes you just, you start to walk up that stairs, the stairs of success in different ways and value changes. But where you kind of go, all right, let me take a pause here. Why is this happening? Or am I recognizing what's in front of me? And am I helping other people in these sorts of things? But I had a 6 week period where within that 6 week period, an audience with the late Pope Francis in Rome. I am in Amman, Jordan, in the Middle East, and I get to go to the baptismal site of Jesus in the West Bank. And not only do I get to go, but for whatever reason, and I didn't say no, they thought that I don't know who they thought I was, but if you search it and look at it, it's amazing that the structure is still like it's unbelievable. And you can walk around it as a tourist, but they don't let you go down to the water, like literally to the spot. Well, they like pushed, they're like, oh, okay, tourists get whatever. And they had me stay back and then they opened the th and they let me go down there. So I had that, which was, you just kind of like, this is unbelievable. And then I sat down and interviewed a direct descendant of the Prophet Muhammad in Jordan. And I went, like, what is, like, this is, this is a little crazy making. And am I recognizing the opportunity, and hopefully it's going to impact my storytelling, because I am that corny. Like I love, very passionate about my book, and it's not because it's about me, but it's about the stories that hopefully I'm sharing in a way that connect with people so that they feel more connected to their own story. And I'd like to think it's because of instances like that where you sort of step back in the moment and go, this is a little bonkers here, and I have to recognize this. This is not just about some Instagram post. This is like take stock, So, I don't even know if that answered your question, other than I try to find something in general in all of these experiences where I just go like, well, that's a first for me, or wow, like I need to, my radar needs to be fully sort of engaged, because this is really an incredible moment that I'm a part of.
Yeah, I think that definitely answered the question. And it made me think of like the stark contrast of like you mentioned that you been to refugee camps earlier, and then you also work with celebrities at the same time and diff obviously different times. But so I could imagine that you have to be kind of like seeing the complete differences in how people live. Like on one hand, you're in a tent in some regard or in the bush, and then in another hand you might be at the top floor at the Waldorf Astoria, or like just there's just completely different ways of life. So has that shaped how you view life at all, or is it just at this point you're so used to the changes that it's kind of just like, oh well, some people live this way and other people live that way?
Great question. The way that I think about it is that, so I remember thinking to myself, Jan, it was like, how am I going to figure this out? Like, I cannot believe that I'm going to be in this, whatever, right? Experience or environment. And so how do I make sure that my nerves are at bay and or they're utilized in a way that keeps me fresh in the moment? I'm a huge sports fan, but it's funny because my mantra or sort of my guiding sort of principle is based in a sport that I watch during playoff time, but I would not just sit here in the middle of July and watch, which is baseball. And I've thought about every one of these as an at bat, getting an at bat. So in essence, there's no difference when I am, on stage in LA doing a live interview with a Magic or someone like that, or Damon John of Shark Tank or these people, versus I am at the refugee camp, to your point, or I'm sitting with a community organizer in the Tambacounda region in Senegal about what they're doing to battle child marriage. Like they're each one of them are at bats that are giving me an opportunity to understand, in those instances, how my physical presence is impacted by the environment, my guest, and vice versa, right? But it's all about the at bat kind of a thing. And really, when I started early on and sort of those initial interviews out of 4,000 plus, I would worry about so many things that I don't worry about now. Like I just, it's like I have to sort of leave all of that to the side. It's an at bat. I get better with every one of them. And you just never know. Like I could, tomorrow there could be a phone call about some random interview that I'm being asked to do or inquire about. And am I ready to do that? Like I had that, it was like, I think it was like a Monday for whatever reason. I remembered I'm sitting in this chair. I get a phone call from this group out of New York and they said, "Hey, your name came up in a meeting. Do you know Habib, the UFC Hall of Famer?" And I was like, yes, because I'm a sports fan, but that's, they said, we heard you would do a different type of interview. And I had nothing to lose. And I said, okay. I said, but I think we should do it in person because of fear of getting things lost in translation. And they were like, okay. And then I took a step further and I said, I think we should be doing it inside the octagon and you should film it. And they were like, can we get back to you? And like 10 minutes later, they said, oh, he loves it. Yes. And then all of a sudden I'm in Miami and I'm capturing, his story in a way that hopefully was unique and not about fighting, but about him as a man and his roots and his distant small village that he's from, kind of a thing. So that's how I've approached all of these things. And I cobble those together, especially when I get asked to do something that I've never done before. And you're like, okay, this is a live environment. I've been asked to do it and I've had those things happen. It's like, whoa. 24 hours from now, I'm live on stage. Okay, let's do it.
So have you been nervous to do these things, or is it kind of like, because I've discovered that there's like multiple different philosophies when it comes to getting out of your comfort zone and trying new things. So there are some who like try something new and they're like, okay, I'm like nervous, but then right as you get on stage and right as the lights turn on and it's like show time. And then there are others who don't even have the nervousness until they get on stage, or it doesn't ever come. So have you ever been nervous with anything that you've done? And then if so, how did you overcome it?
Absolutely. I think there's some level of healthy anxiety or nerves depending upon the individual. So yeah, I have the only so like there are several examples, but for me, when it comes to nerves, sometimes it'll be like if I'm doing a million things and I've got back to back or something like that of interviews, it may be around like what's my first question going to be? Because I don't prescribe anything that I do. There's nothing prescriptive about it. Like if I'm going to interview you, I might do like a very cursory look at what you've done, some key elements so that I understand maybe where I'm gonna, what I'm interested in, what's makes me curious about you. But I don't formulate questions ahead of time, none of that. But now I will say that, and the one example is Magic Johnson. So he walks in the room and he's a commanding, sort of force of nature.
I can
At
imagine.
his size and his personality and just the reverence with which people sort of, and so that was maybe one of the times I was the most, if we use the word nervous, and it was just because I knew I had a discrete amount of time to be impactful, I guess is the way, not for like sport or because there was a target, but you don't want to waste your time. Like, I don't want to waste his time. I don't want to waste my time. I want to make sure that I am being thoughtful about it. And so I have a responsibility in that space. And the only reason that one was a little bit crazy was because as he walked in, of course, he's got his handlers, I mean, which is totally, understandable. There are production people, there's all this stuff going on. And the sound guy, like, immediately treats Magic like any other guest and, like, walks straight up trying to mic him up. It's like, okay, that's not the way to welcome somebody. So there was no malice intended, right? But Magic's
I get what you're
response was
saying.
like recoiling at him, like, whoa, man, hold on a second. And I'm thinking to myself, thanks, man. Thank you. It's already stressful enough. It's hot in here. Like, there's a lot of people watching, don't say this, say it, whatever, but I'm going to be me. And I had one thing in my pocket in that example. I went to Michigan State. Classic. He's probably one of the most famous alum of Michigan State. So I was able to say to him, "Hey, Magic, just a couple of Spartans here in LA." And then he's like, he gave me a hug, you know, whatever, which is cool. And but then of course I had to like, what's my first, you know, we're ready to roll.
Right.
And so I just went with my gut. And when you know, that's my lesson to younger people, especially when they're asking me or I'm speaking at schools and different things. It's like, man, in those situations where you're just not sure, your gut is going to give you more runway with people
Yeah.
than some like prescribed objective that's sterile, like doesn't, you know, it's like, no, it's go with your gut. I went with my gut and I shared how he crushed me as a young boy in a very famous game against my Detroit Pistons, where we did not win the finals of game seven. And so we had this fantastic, he just laughed immediately. And there was a production assistant that caught the photo, and I'm looking at it
Oh,
right now. It's
wow.
behind my camera. And that's such a reminder to me, like just in the moment where you, what the hell am I gonna ask? You know, like
Right.
you freeze. I was myself and it paid off.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a big thing to recognize, especially when you're growing and expanding. Sometimes there is like a level of uncomfort, but that's the only way to grow. And sometimes you have to get a little bit off
Messy.
balance. Yeah. That reminds me of not to the same level, but I was really, really into art for a number of years and still am, but now it's more so working with children and things. But I was at this art meeting and this guy comes up. He's like, "Oh, we're having a pitch competition. You know, guys come out." So I'm like, "Okay, cool. Yes, I'm gonna do it." And then I get there dressed as an artist just to find out it's for IT people, like business professionals. So I'm dressed as like my total artist garb, like just all the way down. I get on stage and usually like people smile and things. They're all like very stone-faced. I didn't do a very good job on the pitch because I got like nervous because my normal like ha, they were just like, but I felt excited because I did it. I made a lot of good connections afterwards, and I can say that I did it. It's a funny story, but at the in the moment, I was like, oh, this is kind of embarrassing, but it worked out. So I definitely agree. I think that not everything goes necessarily according to plan, but when you just trust your instincts and say yes and try anyway, like as long as you can say you did it, you can always do better again. And your story ended up a lot better than mine, but
No,
you
yours is good. They probably were
know.
like, hey, she looks like Beyonce and Diana Ross. That's what I remember. That's what I remember.
Well, thank you. That's what they said. They should bring me back, okay?
Yeah, where's that invite?
Literally. But yeah, so I just can totally understand. And I've not necessarily done 4,000 interviews, but I was doing interviews before this podcast that I started. And there were some guests that were definitely a little bit more, well, a lot more known. Like I interviewed a mayor of West Hollywood and then like some actors and Grammy and Tony, all these different people.
See?
And sometimes I would be like so nervous about it because maybe they weren't as friendly immediately and things, but you know, once he just gets to in the flow of things and just recognize that everyone is human at the end of the day, it just you just learn and you grow from there. But I wanted to hear more about your book because I feel like we've got a good understanding of who you are as a person. We have a good understanding of your experiences, and I also know that you have a book. So if you would like to share a little bit more about what it is and what it's all about, we'd love to hear.
Sure. No, I appreciate the interest. Look, I was sort of stupid lucky. I had, with all my writing that I've done in my interviews, I'd always said like, there's a book inside of me. I think a lot of people will say that. And you know, it's one of the things that was nagging at me for the longest time. And a year ago, it was like, I'm gonna, by my birthday in September, I want to have sent out a proposal to publishers. I got really lucky. Just a couple of weeks before my birthday, I had been contacted by Wiley. They were like the second largest publisher of business books in the world. They've been around since 1807. They're,
Oh,
you know,
wow.
they're a big player, right? And I kept getting pinged by one of their senior leaders, and I took the call, and he just said, "Look, we've been, you know, kind of looking at what you're doing, and we think storytelling is just so important right now in so many different areas of the world, and would you be interested in putting something together about storytelling. So I did that, and they liked it. And so, I jumped on the journey, and I basically had, I had like 4.5 months when I think about it to write the book start to finish. So
Oh, wow.
anybody wants to talk about sort of the writing process, I mean, that's kind of a crazy process. Especially when so many of my friends, it's like, oh, I've been working for 3 years or whatever. I'm like, at what point do you hate that, your own book, right? Because it's just like sitting there calling you, please write more. And so I will, look, you didn't ask me this question, this part of it, but one of my pet peeves going through school and sort of matriculating as a student, as a young person, and then as a young adult, I gravitated to the educators that didn't act like they were born a teacher, right? They had their own journey, their own path. And you see that, I think, especially people who might sort of shake their head yes in like undergrad and graduate school, for those that pursue that, where you just go, sometimes you have a professor where it's like, I know there's a life behind that facade of perfection, the veneer of like success. And so I didn't want that at all to come across in the book. Now, I don't know if I've been successful or not. I sure hope I have been. Look, this is a book for people that, I asked the question, I did in my TEDx talk, it's like, if you're not in control of your own story, Anna, then who is?
That's
And like,
true.
if you're not in control, like, why is that, and who might be in control of it? And so I think everybody, they have a relationship to their story, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. And it's either, it may be a good relationship or developing or an emerging relationship, because they don't know if they can share it and or if they want to deal with the chapters that are buried deep inside. This is a book that I try to push the envelope and use myself as an example. So it's part memoir. In a given chapter, you're going to learn about me. I'm going to take you to the refugee camp. In the same chapter, we're going to go behind the scenes of Formula One. You're going to hear about me driving up to Northern Michigan for summer camp with my dad, and every chapter, I try to find ways in which to convey story and my story. In essence, almost like through different mediums, so that you read, like, if the book opens and it's a scene from Nazi Germany, as if you're reading a scene of a script based on a story that I was told by my father, the one story that stuck with me. Probably one of the main stories about his experience as a child in Nazi Germany. And then I do the flip, because I share with you what was revealed to me by one of, if not the preeminent scholar in socialism and Nazism in the world that I interviewed, and his take on my story. So I'm basically sending a message to the reader that story isn't something that's nice to have. It's not something that you add into your calendar on a Tuesday and revisit on a Saturday. It is everywhere. It is a part of everything. The irony is, Yana, that people know that. So when I say that, it's kind of a ridiculous example or set of examples, but they go, okay, you're right. What's the very first thing you think of if you get pulled over by, one of the first things you think of if you get pulled over for speeding? What's my story? You go to have a first date with somebody as you're getting ready. What are my story? Like, what am I going to share that's going to make me sound smart, attractive, interesting, right? So there are all these sorts of things where story plays a role in the way, but only when we need it at that moment. If we're going in to get interviewed for our first job, what stories am I going to share? What will resonate? And so I want to bend people in different ways where I'm putting myself out there. This is not me being the professor acting as if I haven't been there. So you get to hear, you get to experience the bruising that I've gone through in life. I take you inside the courtroom when I lost a company through nefarious reasons, and I had to fight for my own survival financially in courts. Like, I want you to understand that story is a part of when you have to stand up in front of a judge, when you have to, like, you walk away going, I don't know this guy, but he hopefully, they can't claim that I just sat there and told you the 7 steps. And that to sort of circle back, that's what I told the publisher when they first were interested. I said, look, guys, if you want like the 7 steps to a better story, I'm not your guy. Like, there's an AI model or engine that can spit that out for you. That's not me.
That's true.
And I
That's
don't think
true.
story lives in such a linear sort of format or structure. But if you're looking for a messy, way in which you look at, yep, this is how it is. Like, I had to give a eulogy once, a graveside eulogy. You read that eulogy, because stories are past, present, through life and death in a lot of ways, and I think that that's important for folks. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm encouraged, and thankfully through the all the folks that I have interviewed and the places that I've traveled, I've met some really fascinating people who have volunteered to provide testimonials and blurbs to the book, and those have come back independently, quite well, which is fingers crossed. Because you didn't ask this, but I want people to know this is not about like just selling a certain number of books. That's not my objective at all. Sure, I've got a publisher and all these sorts of things look nice. For me, success means that it provides an opportunity for me in the next, which is to showcase stories of people that may not have the opportunity. And so that's why I want people to, learn more about me if they think I'm interesting or goofy or like I don't want to be like him, but I'll read his book. Like, just know that it's the jet fuel to providing the opportunity to capture stories that I hope other people find valuable.
Absolutely. I'm sorry if you can hear like background. That's my parents.
I don't hear anything. You're
Okay,
good.
perfect, perfect. So yeah, I definitely can resonate with so much of what you said. And like, because I am a children's confidence coach, just like outside of like everything else. And it's not from like traditional training and things of that magnitude. It's like just lived experience and lived life. And I think that that's why I can connect so well with the children and why I can do things that
They can
aren't.
sense it.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just something that's a real passion and it's just like life. And I always tell like young people around me, like, be who you wish you had and be that version, be that person, fill that gap. Because it, to me, they say it takes a village to raise a child. And I think it takes a village to raise a confident, capable child who can go out into the world and share their opinion, have critical thinking, be able to tell their story in their own way and really take ownership of their life. So I definitely can resonate and respect when someone can tell their and live their life and authentically and like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I've experienced. These are, you see this bruise? I got this on Friday at whatever day and whatever year. And I think that especially young people and children and just people in general resonate with authenticity and stories that they can relate to. Because there's another thing about like professors sometimes where like they can tell you what the book says, but they haven't actually, not all the time. Sometimes they have had their own things. Like I went to school for business, but most of my business teachers learn business through books. And it's not to say that you can't learn business through books because, leaders are readers and I like to read and I promote reading with children too. But there's a certain amount of experience that cannot be read. You have to be, it has to be experienced. So I definitely can respect and I appreciate that. We are coming up a little bit on the tail end. So is there anything that you wanted to specifically highlight or speak about that you didn't already have the opportunity to? Of course, I have my three cliche closing questions that I ask
Oh,
everyone.
I
But if
don't.
there's anything that you wanted to share, you didn't get the time, this is your chance.
No, I don't. I think I've loved this conversation. I would just say that if people are interested, I'd be humbled if they would go to just I'm Dr. Rod Berger at any sort of my website, Instagram, LinkedIn, those sorts of things, and the book can be pre-ordered. And I'm learning so much. That's a podcast for another day, just about the promotion of books, even when you have publishers. There's just a lot that goes into it. But if you're inclined, I'd love for people to dig a little bit deeper. And I'm so appreciative of their support and connection through that. But other than that, no, I think I'm ready for these three cliche questions.
All right, drum roll, everyone. So the first one is, if you can think of a time when you were younger and you were in a dark space, what's one piece of advice that you know now that you wish you would have known back then?
So, first thing that came to my mind is I wish I would have understood better my relationship to time. Because as a young person, the anxiety that I felt was always tied to time that I would think comes probably from my father and the stressors that he lived through. And that probably influenced a lot of the advice, which wasn't a lot, but the advice that he did give me, like get a terminal degree, get as many degrees as possible so that you don't run the risk of corporate America, taking a bite out of you. And so I didn't understand time. I didn't understand that I had time. And so I tried to sort of punch above my weight in getting as many things done prior to whatever preconceived deadline I thought that I had at a given age. Like, just because I'm 10, that means I need to be doing things that a 12-year-old's doing. And I don't mean in a bad way. It was actually like getting things accomplished, and the same with school and finishing undergrad early. You know, I think it would be about time. In essence, take a breath, understand tomorrow again the sun will rise. You know, and if you're that sort of, especially for a young person, if it's that anxiety provoking or stressful, give it the night. Like, literally give it the night and look at it the next day. Because if it's hit it
I
where you
think
just
that,
can't calmly make a decision, nothing is going to happen outside of, again, something safety, you know, like present danger, clear and present danger. But, like, you know, if you probably can wait till the morning. Just give yourself, your mind, the opportunity over 7 or 8 hours of sleep, maybe more if you're a young person, hopefully, to see if it sorts out.
I definitely think I could have used that a few times, if I'm
There's a
being
rush to
honest.
judgment, right? Oh my gosh, they need it right now. And it's like, no, they don't, you know.
And I think especially now we're in like the micro society has intensified because you can get everything instantly. So it feels like if you don't have something now, then it's like, what if, what if, what if? And then like the FOMO, I think, kicks in and
Oh yeah.
all types of stuff. So I'm definitely personally learning that now, and it's saved me a lot of money too. Like the stuff that I'm like, oh well, you know, I gotta get this because the children want that, and I gotta get this. I'm like, well, wait. Like, you don't have to do everything at one time.
That's
So
right.
all right. The second question is, the universe and the internet work similarly. They work in very mysterious ways. So we never know who's gonna listen to this, who's gonna watch it. We have no idea who this is gonna reach. Is there any person or organization that you would really like to work with that could either help you accomplish a goal or just a group or people that you'd really like to engage with?
I don't know if there's a if I would answer it directly to your question. Here's what I would say. I would say that, as an encouraging word, I think there are organizations out there for everybody that you can think about, resonate with, follow, participate if you desire after whatever period of time of getting to know them. I can say that there have been organizations that have been very impactful in supporting storytelling for me. Pangea Education. You know, that was one of my trips to that was to the Imvepi refugee settlement. Pangea is incredible because they do one of many things that they do is they create books that are actually representative of the young people that are reading them. People don't know that in the developing world, a lot of the books kids have access to are like Western books. And I'm
I didn't know
sorry,
that.
but if I'm a young African child and all I see is people that look like me, like, what is the point of that? Shouldn't it look like their grandmother or grandfather, the people that they look up to? Like, let them form whatever hero means to them or look up to in that regard. So Pangea is fantastic. The Upper Schellerand Foundation out of Stockholm, they've become family to me. We collaborated with WaterAid. Now we're collaborating with Charity Water, which I'm very excited about. Charity Water is incredible what they do around the world, and Scott Harrison and those folks. Those are two big ones for me, or three, I should say, in total. But there are countless NGOs and groups out there, and really, they're all fascinating to me. The La Corsa Foundation is another one. That was my first entry into Africa and Senegal, and what they do in Senegal is absolutely incredible. So, I'm a big fan of NGOs and nonprofits and what they do, and so. The list would go on and on, but that would be boring your audience. I don't want to do
Oh, no, it's okay. Well, thank you.
that.
All right. And then the last cliche question, you already answered it. And of course, I'll put your links and things in the description. But what's the best way to contact you? And then if someone wants to stay up to date, what's the best way to do all the socials, all the things like that? Like I
Awesome.
said, I'll put your link in the description, but
Well, thank
just
you.
curious.
So it's everything is drrodberger.com. So just DR for doctor, RODB. Berger.com is my website. The same handle for Instagram, Twitter, X. I don't use that as much anymore. And then Instagram. It's all there under that. If they want to learn more about the book, they can do that from the same links. But and I'm an open book in that regard. People want to reach out, they IM. I take pride in answering people that reach out to me. So it's, I know a lot of times we, and I experience it too. I'll send people a note and think, did they really not see that? Did they not? I thought I really put the time in. It was a thoughtful message and they didn't get back to me. So, and like I'm having a conversation later this week with someone who connected with me over Instagram and, get a better understanding of who they are and what they do. And so, yeah, I think that's powerful and I think it keeps things fresh.
Yes. Well, I'll give you, like, I give all my guests and my students signature round of applause for a wonderful conversation. I definitely thoroughly enjoyed learning more about you and your experiences, and I know the audience will too. Before we go, because I know sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, I wish I would have said this, I wish I would have said that. Is there anything that is on your mind or heart or spirit, whatever, that you're like, oh, I wish I could share this, or something that you just want to relay?
I mean, the biggest thing is just take a moment to revisit your own story and whatever that means for you, because just know that there's at least one person, one young person that will resonate and say, I didn't know somebody felt like I did. Didn't know that they had a similar path and look what they're doing. You never know who's listening, who's paying attention. There's a gentleman that I talk about in the book who is at my local grocery store. He's in the produce section. He works 6 out of 7 days there. And on the seventh day, he works at Goodwill. And we have the exact same name, first name. And he's African American. I'm obviously not. And we've just connected. And I talk to him every time. And what's funny and so it just fills me up is the impact our conversations have had on me and on him, and also other people that then want to say hello to him because they realize, one, yeah, he's always here when I'm getting my groceries. And he has a powerful story. He's a human being. And I love it when I've seen young kids with their parents talk to him. And I'd like to think, in some small part, my interaction with him and what we have generated in our energy together as I'm, getting salad and whatever means something to somebody else, and that's impacted them. So.
Yes. Well, thank you for that. I definitely think it's important, like you said. And like, just to add to that, you never know how much a little bit of kindness goes a long way and how a hi impacts people. I'll say this quickly just because we are at the end, really. I was at this like corporate event or whatever, and one of the bartenders was a older gentleman, and I just said, "Thank you, sir." And the way his eyes, like, she just called me sir. And the way
Beyonce's
his
here.
shoulder,
She said, sir.
you are hilarious. Okay, I'm gonna be walking around.
I know I'm not the first person who said, well, you kind of look like you got a Beyonce look going here with Diana's hair. That's what you have.
my mom was gonna be like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm Beyonce, okay?
Yeah. What
You
did
better
you want me
call
to
me.
do? Sorry.
Right, you better call. I don't know, but yeah, it was just so like I was saying, like, you just never know how much something small that you do or what you think is small, how big it will make of an impact to someone else. So
That's
with
right.
that being said, thank you so much for talking and sharing your experience and sharing the stories of the untold and giving people voices where they can be in control of some degree of their own narrative. So I'm excited to see what happens with your book, and I'm just excited for your entire journey.
Thank you, Anna. You've been a fabulous host, and I look forward to future conversations.
Me too. Thank you.